Hey, Halton here for our friends at Unimac. Every one of us is committed to serve and protect. Unimac is committed to us with the most complete laundry solution for the fire service industry. With their virtual NFPA 1851 training now available in collaboration with a leading independent service provider, you can now protect your crew from cancer-causing carcinogens and educate every member of your department on how to properly launder their PPE in compliance with the NFPA 1851 standard. With tailored gear cleaning solutions, easy record keeping, and training all in sync with NFPA 1851, our friends at Unimac deliver the total package. Get the training details at unimac.com/virtual.
Hey, welcome back to Fire Engineering's Hump Day Hangout to our show, Issues and Challenges in Today's Fire Service. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my Hump Day Hangout co-host, Louisville Assistant Chief Terry McGrath. And for, well, most of the rest of our team, Chief Bobby Halton's going to be out today. He's out making the rounds, visiting some folks. Chief Salka is supposed to be joining with us unless he caught a run with his volley place, which always is a possibility. They've been pretty busy, but we're hoping he'll join us. We've got Chief Scott Thompson with us as always. And again, we put together a great team a little while back to host these shows and talk different topics and bring on some very special friends like we did today with Chief Eric Reeser from the Flower Mound, Texas Fire Department. Welcome, Chief.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great having you, buddy. It's always great seeing you too. And getting caught up and everything. And to our viewers, another great boss, another one who gets it, another fire chief who gets it, truly gets it. But we've got another great one lined up for you today. As a reminder, we tell you this every show. If you have any questions, zip over to Twitter and send them out our way. Just make sure you add hashtag FE Talk for this show. And today, before we get to our topic, Eric, what's new? What's going on in Flower Mound, Texas, buddy? You guys are growing and building, and for our viewers, how many firehouses you guys up to now?
Well, in February we just opened Station 7, and so it was an area of town that kind of got skipped over years past as we grew out west, and the town's pretty linear across Lake Grapevine, and so it got skipped over, a big void in the middle of town, so I was able to come back and build Station 7 right there off of the north shore of the lake and be able to service the lake a little better and do some water rescue out of that house. So we're minimum staffing at 34 now per day with a fit on the car. And Station 5 is a truck-only station now. And then Central Fire Station has truck, engine, medic, and battalion out of it. So gives us 6 engines, 2 trucks, 3 medics in the BC. And it has made an enormous difference for the organization to be able to respond to our one alarm fires heavy and take care of business for sure.
Now, is 5's the tiller?
Which, yeah, 5 is where the tiller went.
And you guys, I mean, and 7's, and we've always kind of talked about a lot of different places that we get a chance. Scott's out there getting to teach a lot, and has been for years. Scott, you get to see these stations that these departments that, it's almost like we're catching up. It's like we're catching up with firehouses. They're out building the firehouses. Eric, I remember a department in Florida, 250 member department, about 18 state. They were some of their ETAs to these multimillion dollar houses, like 20 minutes, because they had outbuilt so far trying to get caught up. And I know you guys still have a lot of room to go and grow. And we've always known that. We've always said it's just a matter of time for all of a sudden, bang, all that building's going to go out west and all the way to pretty much the speedway and to the airport out there. And you guys have been growing leaps and bounds. I had this in my notes, Scott and T, before we go any further, just to remind folks about FDIC, August 2nd through the 7th, August 2nd through the 7th, back to Monday through Saturday. I talked with Bobby the other day, Scott, registrations are actually a lot higher than they thought. I mean, right, when they're looking at how many people usually sign up per day, they're not that far off. So, I think it's going to take us a year or two with all the conferences to get back to where we were, you know, with budgets. You know, it's not as much people not wanting to go. I think a lot of it money wise is going to have to come back. But
and you saw where they extended the call for presentations also by a week or so. So
exactly. I was just going to mention that July 2nd. Yeah. Good one. Good. Thanks for bringing that up. July 2nd is the extension for calls for presentations, but August 2nd through the 7th deadline, July 2nd for 2022 back in April. So we got that coming up, which is exciting. But Terry, what Louisville, what's going on, buddy? You guys had a good fire yesterday. The guys did good, huh?
Yeah, we had a nice little fire yesterday that had a disabled wheelchair bound elderly lady in that house. So, but fortunately things worked out and they were able to get her out prior to our arrival. But yeah, so good fire this morning. Went mutual aid on fire this morning to Highland Village. And we've got 7 positions open right now that we're testing for on July the 6th. That application process is open. So, my shout out to, you know, any of the neighboring departments, if anybody now, we got 7 positions and, you know, I think we've reached that point, Chief, that, this department's big enough that it's, we're kind of at that breakover, you know, where it used to be small and easily managed. And now we're big and we're, I think Chief Greaser could attest to that. You're spread out now and the retirements are coming fast and furious, and just we got a lot of guys that have done their time and dropping off, and so we're got a lot of new faces around here. So it's not a dull moment, that's for sure.
Well, for those that don't have their atlas pulled up, which for some of our young people that used to be like a paper map a long time ago, you know, or their maps go. So Flower Mound, where Chief Greaser is from, they're on the west side of Louisville. The Colony, where Chief Thompson is from, the east side. So we just need Coppell, Grapevine to the south, and then, you know, Lake City to the north, so you can recruit from all of them and steal from them. You know, it's kind of funny how everybody there, it's, you know, they're so, and to our viewers, there are so many jobs in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex for firefighters, and it's been this way for several years now. There's not enough candidates. So I tell people all the time, if you're a firefighter EMT, first of all, if you don't have anything, come on out there. If you want to be a firefighter, there's departments, Dallas, Fort Worth, Arlington, DeSoto, you know, that are doing, you know, hiring general hires. And then if you're a firefighter EMT, there's a ton. If you're a firefighter paramedic hopefully with a clean record, you pretty much write your own ticket. And there's some great fire departments, and the Colony and Flower Mound are freaking awesome places to work with not just, and I'm saying this because the two bosses are sitting here, which, you know, like, our my surrogate godfather, Chief Al Brunicini, used to say, you can't shit up, you know, it comes downhill. It starts somewhere. You can, it's just messy, but you can, it all starts at the top, but it also takes having great people, great firefighters, great bosses, like all three of those fire departments do, you know, the Colony, you know, Flower Mound and Louisville. And Terry, by the way, and you'll know where this guy, when you see, my friend Michael McComb is telling me I appreciate the kind words, you know, the kind words that he was saying about me the other day. I appreciate that very much. Anyway, hey, our topic today, guys, is firehouse safety and security, and how much is too much and how much is too little. And I guess we're not necessarily talking about, we can, before we get into the security part. The safety part, you know, I ask people when I teach how many places out there actually do any fire station inspection. And I don't mean a safety inspection. I don't mean a fire inspection. You're checking your necessarily just your fire extinguishers and things like you would do in a business. But, you know, I started this in Trophy Club. We took about 9 different fire station safety inspection forms and cherry picked from all. I've sent it out a couple thousand times since then. And for any of our viewers, if you want it, get my email at the end. I'll be happy to send it to you. And it covers everything inside and outside, from treads on the floor, normal stuff like fire extinguishers, but the grinders, eye protection, you know, flammable liquid storage outside, you know, every from roofing shingles being loose that you could visibly see to, you know, the trees not being trimmed. Because with parks will tell you one of the leading causes with parks and recreation are orbital injuries. People, you know, so they do the 3 feet away from any sidewalk, 7 feet high trim of the trees, so people don't get whacked in the eyes and stuff. And it has everything from that to, you know, every alarm, everything you could think of. And it literally, once you go through it once, it takes nothing to get through it. But the officer has to sign off. Any repairs, any needs are addressed at the end. And then all three station officers have to sign off on it. And what it does, it tells all three station officers, hey, this has been burnt out, or this isn't working right, or this is leaking or whatever. And there's follow-up to it. And it's pretty cool. So, you know, if you don't have that, folks, I'd be happy to send that to you. You should have that in there. And that also addresses station firehouse security, meaning, you know, door lockage, gate, you know, gates for the parking lots and different things like that. And the topic that Terry and I were talking about, Scott and Eric, you know, about this one was in light of, and we're going to get to Chief Greaser in a second here, folks, for our viewers, because I'm sure a lot of people, you know, if you don't follow the news, you didn't pick up on what happened, you know, necessarily Flower Mound, as well as a lot of other places. You know, sometimes we take for granted that everybody loves the fire department, and that, you know, and you know, a firehouse has always stood as a place of safety, a place where people, when they drive by the firehouse, I'm not trying to sound too goofy, but it gives them a warm and fuzzy feeling knowing the firefighters in that neighborhood. You know, that's the place where people go for directions, where kids go when they're lost, seniors when they need help. You know, the firehouse has always been that. And we've never really thought of it as a place where bad things can happen. You know, and sometimes in some cities where some of the more distressed neighborhoods, you know, I remember working a couple of firehouses where we had the Cosentino wire up. We, you know, when I used to spend time with Ray Hoff, you know, with the chain link fence, with the stockade fences at the tops and bottom, because they used to shoot down at the cars, you know, engine 4 Tyler 10 at Division Larrabee back in the old days. Now there's like a Super Target and a Starbucks across the street. But when it was part of the Cabrini Green Housing Project, they were the only firehouse in Chicago. They used to park their cars inside, because if you go by the firehouse today, it's riddled with bullet holes all over the firehouse. They had 5/8 inch Lexan glass inside all the windows to protect them, diamond plane for the watch desk and all that. And you drive by some of these firehouses and you expect to see, you know, cars parked inside cages and stuff like that. But now you get out, you know, and you know, you're like, we don't really have much happen here. Terry, Station 3, Scott, when you work there, all of a sudden we're like putting cameras up and gates on things because cars are getting broken into. And Station 6, Firehouse 6 out near Castle Hills, and regarded as a nice neighborhood, a nice area years ago. Remember, I don't know if Terry or Scott, if you remember exactly when that was. Scott, you were, you know, chief with us then. You know, they left their back rear bay door open. Just nobody checked it. Nobody did that whole perimeter check we'll talk about, I'm sure. And early morning, a drug addict female, she walked in and she actually opened up the door to the bunk room, and Rick Downey, one of the firefighters, said, hey, he thought it was one of the guys coming in early, turn the effing lights off. And she shut them off. And then she got a creeper and she loaded up because she couldn't lift it. She loaded a TV and wheeled it out to her car. And she was just stealing stuff. They found her at a car wash. I mean, just walk around the firehouse. And that's happened so many times, you know, in light of, you know, what just happened in California. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, you know, different scenarios, but where employees, workplace, you know, where a fellow employee, a disgruntled employee or ex-employee, but this was a current employee, you know, came back and shot two people, killed one, went back, let his place on fire, shot himself and all that. You just don't know. Terry, you know, you handle our IAs for a long time, our internal affairs investigation, you bomb and arson chief there. And there was always this concern, and then I want to throw this at Eric and Scott as well. But Terry, every time we had to cut someone loose, every time somebody fired themselves, there was always that concern. Well, not always, but depending on who it was. All right, do we change the combinations and all the firehouse doors? And you know what happens if he comes back because he thinks that these guys betrayed him and he's made threats or stuff or whatever? And I always said, you know, I'd love to do it, but you don't think he can figure out a way to get into the firehouse after working all the time, or doesn't have somebody that's going to tell him, well, no, I'll give you the combination, do it or whatever. But Terry, what were your thoughts every time somebody brought that up? You know, what are we going to do?
Well, I, you know, it's crazy now, Chief. And if you came by any of our facilities today, every one of our stations has control access into the station. So everyone's issued the key card. They have a numeric, and so we can shut access to the station immediately, whereas in the old days when we just had the manual The manual style locks, certainly it wasn't as easy, but unfortunately, and I think Chief Greaser, when we get into the story of what recently happened in a place that no one in their right mind would ever envision something like that happening. So, you know, I think when you said originally, you know, a topic for the show, how much is too much and how little is too little. And really in thinking about that, Chief, I don't know the answer, because in the stations that we have a couple of states, this station where I'm at right now, if in my younger days, I could throw a rock and hit the jail. I couldn't do it at my age now, but my window faces the place where the people that get let out of jail walk by holding their shoes and their shoelaces and go sit on the curb and lace their shoes up and walk off. So we're probably more, you know, hyper aware of our surroundings. This is kind of a busy intersection in our city. We've got a couple of fast food places right here. There's a lot of pedestrian traffic. Denton County Juvenile Probation is literally on the other side of our building in a next parking lot. So, but we have some stations like you were describing earlier and our station out in Castle Hills. And I think Chief Greaser station, it's sitting in the kind of place that you would leave all your doors open. And you would hope that Saturday morning, someone would come through that door with a plate of cookies or something like that. So I don't know, you know, society's change and unfortunately we have to change with it. And to a degree that makes sense. I mean, you can't protect against everything, but, you know, I think, the best thing that anyone can do is just be, you have to be way more aware than you used to be, because
that's right.
Everything's on the table now. And nothing sacred or safe, like you were alluding to earlier, Chief, that firehouses were a place of you stopped in there for help. And it was always a great place to be. And, you know, unfortunately you're a beacon now. So yesterday going home for lunch, I pulled up behind a husband, wife in a domestic deal. She jumped out of the car when he started to go through the intersection, she jumped out of the car. You know, I mean, it's just, you just got to be so much more aware constantly.
Well, and when I was at Interman Trophy Club, like I always joke about, Trophy Club was a great fire department, great guys there. It was, I always tell people, Scott, it was Gilligan's Island. It was a 3-hour tour. For some of our young viewers, that's a really old show we used to watch. Anyway, that being said, you know, it turned out to be a day short of a year fixing stuff. And it was a pain. I'll tell you, when I first got there, it was a pain because you had to use a key card to get into firehouse anytime, you know, and to get into firehouse or to get into the quarters. And the more you think about, you know, because even John was saying, and I don't know if he's going to be able to join us, you know, in the Bronx, they used to leave the doors open in the Bronx all the time. In the heart of the Bronx, with the guys, there's a guy in watch, you know, all that stuff, you know, things. And you know, he says, you know, yeah, their cars were protected. They had to lock things up because if you left the doors open, you come back and stuff would be gone and so on and so forth. But you don't think of somebody coming in, you know, and opening fire and end up having a shootout in the firehouse and things like that. You know, so the question again comes to you, all right, are you okay with it? Because you want to leave the doors open. You want to seem like you're part of the neighborhood. So they see the apparatus and all that stuff, so on and so forth. It's hard. There's a lot of chiefs, you know, and Terry Scott and Eric that have said, you know what, we can't do it anymore. Guys, we're in quarters, doors are down. If somebody wants to get in, they'll ring the doorbell, we'll go greet it. You know, but nowadays with cameras and things and so on and so forth, it's got a little bit easier. But, and before we get to Eric, Scott, what are you guys doing? And, you know, the county again, you know, since you've been there has grown leaps and bounds, personnel wise, stations wise, and that busy ass fire department, you know, what again, you know, nice town. What have you done on your end, or what have your guys brought up? I'm sure they brought up things. You know, everybody was talking about what happened in Flower Mound.
Yeah, and we're a little behind. We just got cameras put into all our facilities. Of course, we're building new facilities. We just built fours. We're building fives, and they'll have the latest and greatest. But our other three stations are old, and they're just old traditional firehouses, and they got the keypad, you know, like you're talking about. And we used to change them. We don't anymore. So we can probably be a little bit more proactive, and certainly what happened in Flower Mound brought it to our attention. But, you know, it's an awareness thing. Like our station one, that's our only firehouse that's two stories. So when the doorbell rings, the policy is everybody comes downstairs instead of just one guy coming down to check the door. And that way, you know, if somebody's going to come in and and try to rush them. They're all there. So we have some of those things, but we're in the process. It's been a multi-year capital item to get security in all city buildings improved, but we're a little bit behind the time, truth be told.
Well, it was, you know, this was a big push, you know, after 9/11 and some other things made everybody off. Now we got to get generators, we got to get this, we got that, and we got to be careful with this and careful with that. And then it kind of, like anything else, it ain't going to happen. We're back to our new normal and all that stuff and so on and so forth. And Eric, Chief Greaser, Flower Mound, Texas, great. I have the luxury and the honor of bragging on, and I'll specifically, I get to brag on the county because Scott's one of our teaching partners and that, and we've been friends a long time, and get to brag on Louisville. There's two stories specifically, especially Pride and Ownership, I talk about with Flower Mound, where it gives me a chance to brag on you. I always get to talk about Chief Greaser being a great boss, and there's great firefighters and great officers there. I always talk about like Flower Mound and the colony, you know, when they show up at your fires, you have your favorite fire departments. You know, when you guys know it, being chiefs, without pointing to anybody, we were talking before we went live about a couple, you know, that show up with no gear and no tools. But we all, as a boss, when you're running a fire, and especially when things are going, things are shitting and getting, you're looking and you're going, you turn and you see a couple of companies walking on a street on that next alarm. And I'm telling you, you know, when you saw the guys in the county walking up, when you saw the guys from Flower Mound dressed, tools, smiles, they didn't care what the assignment was. It wasn't like, oh, we're going to go do that. They didn't care if you said, guys, look, I need a favor. Take those shovels and see this big pile of horse poop. I need to dig that, move it over here and let these guys go fight the fire. And like, all right, chief. And they're high fiving. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a pleasure when you see those kind of people walking up, no matter what the assignments are. And Eric, I get to talk, I brag. There's a couple of fires I specifically brag, a couple incidents about your guys. One is when I had the opportunity to talk about the Mayday with John Wright, you know, and then I get to talk about a fire I went to once, you know, and just great fire department, great leadership, great community. And like Terry said, not the town you would think that would have anything kind of going on in a firehouse. So back up. So about a week or a few days before the incident we're going to talk about, you guys, your PD went to a well-being check, right, for a suicide, possible suicide or something. Explain what happened there.
Hey, just real quick on that. You know, boy, that was a career event in my mind, and really some lessons learned from that one. You know, it came in from the wife, a single caller from the wife, a single shot. Presumed to be a suicide, some mental health issues at the residence. We had ran on that house before, actually had some knowledge of the person. You know, I'll just say that he had attempted suicide before. And so this was kind of a known address, but you know, the crew that responded in initially, what their staging would be presumed to be okay, except for the house of the event was in the T intersection of a residential neighborhood, and they're lined up straight with the front door. Literally lined up straight with the front door, the way they responded in. Certainly they've got some distance. You know, thank God that not only do I have ballistic gear on every riding position of our fire apparatus and our medics, but our PD is well equipped. And, you know, the officer had a little bit of a suspicion of the call, and they all put on their level A ballistic gear and had their shields in hand. Those shields were really only rated for handgun rounds. But they fortunately had a plate carrier vest on rather than a soft vest. The three officers went in just to verify and were met with rifle round gunfire inside the house, which, you know, the injuries, you know, as I understand them, were really related to the shields coming apart from rifle rounds. But literally the officer's life was saved. No question about it. His life was saved. He took one right to the center mass, right to the chest, and walked away from it. Look, we didn't even transport him for a long time. Where things got really hanky though, was that we moved up close when the officers, you know, called for medics, called for help. So now our medic is literally right at the front yard. And they're unsure, they're unprepared. They didn't put their ballistic gear on yet. So there's a lot of missteps that happened there. They think they're going to extract an officer that's mortally wounded. And that wasn't the case, thank God. But our medic then wasn't able to leave for the rest of the event and received some gunfire in the night. As Louisville's TAC team, SWAT team came and assisted, and robots and all the technology to try and bring this thing to a conclusion. But thank God nobody was mortally hurt or even seriously wounded. And, you know, but it was, what an event. What an event where he was willing to shoot in the night at all the robots and the, you know, come outside and make rounds down the neighborhood.
Well, and a couple of things you brought up, and I'm glad you brought them up because I had them in my notes, Eric. What, you know, and we've had, Terry and I had Battalion Chief Tammy Kaya from Dallas. She was in the 1st Battalion and one of their 29-year SWAT guys, sergeant, after the five police officers were murdered by that coward, when Chief Brown actually sent the robot out with the C4, which some of the
right, you know,
sensitive folks out there didn't like. And, you know, Chief Brown's up in Chicago now, superintendent, trying to deal with that mess. And he, you know, like Terry would say, he grew up in law enforcement, you know, from the very beginning all the way through and all that. But I remember after that, Scott, I think we talked about it on the show here as well. It was like after 9/11, everybody went to buy their own masks, their own canisters. Instead of everybody buying the same stuff, everybody in a hurry to outdo each other bought different masks, different configurations. Stuff didn't, you know, match up or nothing like that. And then all of a sudden, everybody's out buying tactical body armor for the people, which was fine, but with no policies or nothing. And you know, some departments, I won't say who, you know, not to embarrass anybody, but so they bought bulletproof vests for their medics or for the firefighters, and they were red, and you know, my son, you know, you guys know my son was an FMF corpsman with the Navy Attached Marines, which is a combat medic, and he brought up several things. He brought up, well, we're not allowed to wear anything that makes it look like a corpsman because there's a bounty on us. They kill us. They kill a lot of other people. You know, they started doing that World War II with Japan. They stopped wearing the red crosses because why would you put your people in a red or a light blue or whatever? And the first ones that seemed, Eric, to really do it right, because look, we, all of us, Terry, you're still in law enforcement, you know, still carry your peace officer certificate. You're a Dallas cop, everything else. You know, I love our, we're very, very, very partial, all of us, to our law enforcement family, to our dispatchers as well. But the goal shouldn't be to make your firefighters look like police officers, and right. And so many people were dressing their guys to look like cops. And I wrote our policy where you either had to wear your turnout coat over the vest, or the vest, if you, and I use a picture from Spring, Texas, the vest they wear are the same material as the bunker coats, the same striping, the same, almost looks like a safety vest instead right. of a tech. So when you look, you see there's no doubt cop. Oh, that's a firefighter. Now that's not going to keep somebody from shooting a firefighter, mind you, but why would you? Because we always talked about it. If you remember the old LA city, remember the bank robbers, the guys that years ago, they had a tactical body armor. Do you guys remember? They were walking on the street and they're being shot, and the fire engine made a left instead of a right. As he drove between the police officers and the bad guys that are exchanging fire, the bad guys with the rifles went and they waited for the engine. Well, they don't do that anymore. So why would you dress your guys up, number one, and body armor that makes them more, look more like law enforcement, where, again, I know that they're still going to come after, you know, firefighters no matter what, but, you know, at least be smart about it. Secondly, and tactical medics is a whole nother show. And Terry, remember you and I talked about this. My son asked, he said, Dad, he goes, after we had the big thing in Trophy Club at the high school with the bomb threat, with the guy from Europe was talking to the kid in class and was given actual, on the phone saying, well, two Flower Mound police officers just walked by me. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's calling live stuff out. You know, anyway, that being said, my son's like, Dad, why would you put paramedics in the hot zone? He goes, I understand. He goes, I don't care if they're police officers or not. How often do they train? He goes, you know, police officers are in that mentality all the time, bad guy mentality, because they have to be. He says, your guys go and train once a month, maybe twice a month, whatever. Some of them carry guns, some don't. He goes, look, I'm going to tell you, he goes, I train all of my Marines, and Scott, your son, you know, I mean, he says, I train all my Marines on how to use a tourniquet, and I equip them with tourniquets, two tourniquets each. He goes, and I train them how to save one of their buddies' lives till I can get to them. He goes, the only thing you're going to do for a down police officer is control the bleeding. He goes, and why would you put them up there where they're being shot? You know, he goes, I understand in a forward position where they're protected. He goes, but he goes, I'm not trying to sound bad. And he brought up some very interesting points about how far do you go to put a firefighter paramedic that is was sitting watching television after having lunch and now is wearing body armor and is crawling next to the cops. You know, at what point do you not train the cops how to, like the Marines, Scott, how to drag a buddy to a place, what he used to call dad, a security position or place of safe refuge where he, because he goes, if I'm going to be treating him, he goes, I always had security. He goes, I always had somebody because I have to put my rifle down. I have to kneel on it. He goes, and I'm taking care of a wounded Marine. My head's not up looking to see who's shooting. And he had people shooting at him at one time. He goes, I've got what they call security. I've got someone covering me. He goes, so who's the, he goes, I just don't understand it. So I guess that brings up, you know, a whole topic for another day is how far do we put our people in the hot zone when it comes to that? We love our cops. We take care of our cops, but what good are we doing by putting someone who drills once in a while on it up here where they should be, maybe here, not out here, but, you know, close enough where you can render aid. But I've seen some in areas I'm going, why are we there? You know, the only thing he's going to do is the same thing that officer could do, and that's apply a tourniquet. And then they're going to have to drag him out to start getting fluids. They're not doing that out in the open. They got to get him somewhere else or whatever. So that's one thing. That's an interesting point. And the body armor, look, I'm all about it, Eric. I'm glad we're doing that now for our people. Give them the option to wear it. They can wear it or they don't have to wear it, you know, unless some places order you to wear it, depending on where you're at. But some smarts as to what color and how you're doing it. So this happened how many days before the incident at Station 7?
So the same shift. So their very next shift.
Oh my God. Very,
we finished, you know,
I thought it was like a week apart.
No. Oh, so I was in the command post that first event all night long. It resolves by daybreak. You know, they get off, they go home. You know, we probably bobbled a few things there, you know, with some CISM of the crew that was directly embedded in that. But, you know, the very next shift, my phone rings at about 8 o'clock from the BC who's en route to the call. He says, hey, we've got an active event in Fire Station 7. I said, an active event? He says, yeah, we've got a potential shooter in the station. I said, God, you got to be kidding me. Unbelievable.
And these in this neighborhood, like I said, it has nothing to do with neighborhoods. I shouldn't say that because, you know, some of us did grow up in the best of places, including myself. And you're like, you know, it just.
But it's affluent. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Sign up the streets says, you know, the houses starting at 1 million. You know, it's big lots, big mansions. You know, when we built the fire station there, it's shoehorned in a neighborhood. I mean, it was land deeded with the development 20 years ago. And presumably unbuildable because of the grade and the water issues and things like that. But, you know, our neighbors are front, we're in their front yards. And so we put up a very nice horizontal cedar rail fence, a privacy fence, really not all for security, although that's there, but look, so our lights don't shine in their front door. I mean, we're right in the neighborhood in the very affluent homes. You know, this call came in and, you know, there's a park just about a eighth of a mile up the street, a real nice park off the side of the road. And, you know, people were reporting that a man without a shirt on and with a long gun was presenting in the park, and everybody's in panic. The phones, the 911 calls.
Nobody knows off. Where this guy came from. He just showed up. He didn't live there, right?
He lives just another eighth mile up the street.
Oh,
and,
good Lord.
And we had made a run in the night, not fire department, PD had. So I think, you know, some domestic issues going on. I'm saying post-COVID issues, you know, is this where society is as we evolve post-COVID? You know, as a fire department, you know, we've really kind of settled back off of some of the COVID restrictions where all the doors were closed and don't let anybody even in the front foyers where the restrooms are. For the public, so we had all that locked down. Now we're open, and Chief, the doors, all four bay doors are open on the secure side where the fence is, where the firefighters park. Those are open. They're open on the public side. And look, it's a beautiful Saturday morning. It's been raining here for weeks, and it's a beautiful Saturday morning. The crew checks their trucks. Now they're in the workout facility. They're in the fitness room. Some are on the treadmill. Some are lifting weights. Everything's just a beautiful Saturday morning. Everything's good. The phone call they get, that fortunately, God willing, the captain had the apparatus cell phone on him. So he had the iPhone on him. The house phone is in the fitness room, and they ring simultaneously. Dispatch is calling on the house phone. The BC is calling on the cell phone. And it goes like this: lock it down. You've got a shooter, coming in. And they're like,
it's unbelievable. Can you imagine you're the officer in your firehouse and they're telling you you're working out? It's a Saturday, like you said, it's beautiful. And you're getting a call to lock it down. There's a shoot. I mean, just, I can't imagine.
It just doesn't even compute. Not in my wildest, assessment of threats. Am I thinking that's why we built the security fence? That's why we did a few things on that facility as we worked with the architect to try and improve, our next generation of firehouse. But so it goes like this: when they hung up the phone and they poked their head out the door, which takes them into that secure area behind the fence. And not only is it a fence, but we have a rolling gate that closes that off. So when the apparatus returns to quarters, they go through that rolling gate. That gate ends up preventing PD from getting to the backside of the firehouse. So they have to scale the fence. And, there's some other lessons learned with that. But when the crew poke their head out, the very first thing they hear is, where the hell are you? I know you're in here. Where the F are you? I mean, the guy's yelling for him. He's already in the station. The potential shooter is already in the bay, and he's screaming for him. And you can imagine, the cap there is a great, great, great guy, Steve Beagle. And, he says, my heart sank. Like, how could this be? He's already in. One of my other firefighters there is a Purple Heart recipient and been to combat, and he goes into combat mode. I mean, he's right in the element now. Like, hey, it's time to take action. So they bail out of the back of the station and over the fence, over the HOA masonry wall, and right into our neighbor's front yard. So bam, within seconds, they're pretty secure.
Right.
They've got themselves out of harm's way in just a few seconds. Had he have got into the station, like down the center hallway, look, today they built all the fire stations are built with minimum number of steps to get to the truck for response times. And so if he'd have made it to that center hallway, you don't have a whole lot of other options. But they got out. Now they're safe. I mean, the rest of the story is they're safe. But immediately they shift gears into, okay, if it goes down, who's going to treat, we're going to be the first medics here. And so shortly after there, one of our officers enters the bay. He walks around the end of the truck, and the gentleman's the wrong term. The actor lowers his shotgun at him. So he's got a shotgun leveled straight at him. He fires off several rounds, several of which hit our fire truck, station wall, things of that nature. Fortunately, as it turns out, he wasn't struck by those rounds. The officers, this is probably one of the, what I'm told is one of the best accurate shots of our FMPD. But he missed all five rounds, and subsequently was able to tase him and subdue him at the captain's door of the apparatus. So the very first treating medic is firefighter Carroll, the one I spoke about a second ago that's been to combat. He's the very first one to treat him and trying to, get a handle on, what are the injuries? Is he wounded in such a way? He's really only got some head injuries, but man, it just totally opens up that at any time, any place, somebody, it doesn't matter that where you're at or whether you're in an area of more threat or you're in a very affluent neighborhood like Station 7 is for Flowermound Fire Department.
Well, I can't imagine, and Scott and Terry jump in there as well, because both of you with your guys, you mentioned just the shift before the guys are dealing with a, hey, Bobby, just before you're talking about the guys dealing with you know, a shooting. You almost took a round at that one, right? With the suicide.
Yes, sure did.
The guy who shot three cops, right? Two or three police officers. That crew gets off duty, comes back, you know, gets back to work. And like you said, it's a fluid neighborhood. And this guy walks in a firehouse. And just the thought, can you imagine when you talked about debriefings and and critical incident stress management, when he's yelling, I know you guys are effing in here, where are you at? You know, something along those lines. I'm sure he just didn't want to talk to him. You know what I'm saying? I mean, the thought of what would he have done? What would have happened? Think about what would have happened if dispatch didn't call and say, hey, you guys got a shooter, a guy with a gun walking around, you know, in your apparatus bay. And a guy walks out there, you know, who's in there? Oh, hang on a sec, sir. I'll be there in a sec. You know, I mean, like we normally do.
Yeah.
I mean, we could be talking about a whole different, horrible, god-awful scene. I mean, this is Fairmont, Texas. This guy walks the firehouse and it's a shootout, you know, between PD and all that.
You think so, you know, what I take away from this, Chief, and not in a million years, right, does anybody at work, and, you know, I think if you're in a fire station in South Dallas or in a place that's prone to violence, prone to it happens more than it does at Station 7 in Flowermount, Texas. But the point to all that is that when dispatch called that station locked down, because I have to be honest with you, there's a lot of people right now that I don't have a lot of time to tell you something, but dispatch calls and says, lock your station down. So there's a bunch of us who would be like, well, what's this all about? Right. So,
right.
You know, hey, I'm going to walk down because I'm going to go solve a problem. What do we do for a living? We go and solve problems. Hey, there's something in your bay. Lock your station down. Well, I'll go out here and figure out what's going on. And so, you know, my hat's off to these guys. One of our personnel was in, so they had a deal at a shopping mall in Dallas a couple of weeks ago, a mental health crisis issue in the mall. Security's trying to deal with this guy. He makes a lot of loud noises that people who aren't witnessing what's happening think it's gunfire. Someone yells, shooter, the whole mall erupts into, you know, whatever. But the point to all that is that as this herd of people are running by where our firefighter and his wife were sitting, they're yelling, there's a shooter. But there's a certain number of people that are sitting there and it doesn't process.
Right.
And I'm not faulting anybody for that, because I'm certainly of that. You know, when I would go to work as a police officer, I used to always say I felt a lot safer in South Dallas and Oak Cliff than I did if I was in a more affluent neighborhood. Because I literally got out of my car, every contact I made with somebody, I 100% viewed it as a potential threat. I was always on guard. Whereas when you're at Station 7 in Flowermount, hey, look at this, man, it's $1 million homes. And so when you get that phone call, lock your station down, whatever the code word is, whatever the buzzword is, it's time to react. And you think about it with the business that we're in, right, Chief, as you always say it. It's not out until we say it's out. There's no fire till we say there's no fire. And our investigative nature is, well, there's a problem outside. Let's go see what it is. And so, you know, I mean, my hat's off to your guys, because if I had to lay money on a table that morning, let's take a guess what's going to happen today. It wasn't that scenario.
Zero. And
never in a million years would you find yourself involved in that.
Just like you said, look how many different ways. And Chief Halton, thanks for joining us today. I know you're in the middle of a bunch of stuff. We just talked briefly to get you caught up about the very shift before this shooting in the firehouse of Flowermount. The guys had pretty much a suicidal subject, barricaded, shot three cops in Flowermount, shot their ambulance. I mean, and those guys get off duty, come back to work on a Saturday, and this all happens. This guy walks in his firehouse and, I mean, looking for them to shoot him. That's what I'm going to say, because that I don't think he was looking to say, hello, can I have a cup of coffee? And they end up in a shootout, the cops, with this guy in his firehouse. You know, so we're talking about where do you go with security? Where do you go with, you know, I mean, what do you do? Some of this stuff, I don't know if will ever be preventable, because I think I hate to say the word bulletproof, but I mean, there's nothing, you know, it's a firehouse. If people want to get in or people want to do stuff, it's going to happen. But at what, how far do we go? And Bobby, we got you now here. How far do you go with protecting your people regarding firehouse security and things like that? I think the policy thing, Terry, you brought up, you know, it's one thing to have a policy. What do you do, you know, security wise in your firehouse? But I agree with you, Terry. You know, if somebody called and said, lock it down, you've got whatever, there are going to be some guys, what the hell's going on? What are you talking about? And they're going to want to walk out there or see what's going on, where these guys bailed after, especially after this guy opened up the door and said what he said. Where are you at? I know you're effing in here. What a gun, what a long gun, you know? Yeah. So Bobby, that was where we're at. We're talking about what do you do? You know, it's hard to keep a disgruntled employee who knows the combinations and all that stuff, but just general firehouse security. You're on mute, buddy.
I apologize. I'm on my phone. I'm in the Chicago airport because the folks at American Airlines thinks it's better to fly from Tulsa 1,000 miles to Chicago and then another 1,200 miles down to San Antonio, just so you get an idea of the entire breadth and width of the nation with your ticket. So thank you, American Airlines. Just kidding. There's some flight difficulties this morning, but I am heading down to Chicago to visit with Charles Hood and the men and women down in San Antonio. But, you know, to the Flower Mound incident, oddly enough, this morning, before I went to the airport, I had a call with Jess Milner. And Jess is a Norwegian firefighter. And they're experiencing a lot of the same acts of violence, if you will. And acts of violence towards uniformed persons is on the rise there. And our friends, Steve Marsar, and I'm trying to remember who the other fellow was, from FDNY recently did a really good presentation on what they did during the civil unrest in New York City. But the problem becomes for us as uniformed personnel is that we were always kind of sacrosanct, right? We were kind of like untouchable. Folks didn't want to, you know, mess with firefighters. But that's changed. And, you know, when you look at workplace violence, like the firefighter was killed in Los Angeles County and the Flower Mound incident, and there's many, many others. You know, we have to be prepared for all of that, but how can you becomes the question, right? And I think that general readiness, fitness, good communication, that's going to be the key. You can't prepare for every single scenario. You can't, you know, who would have ever imagined 19 men flying airplanes into buildings intentionally simultaneously on the same day? You know, that kind of malevolence and evil is almost incomprehensible. But we can, and I think John Lejeune from the Marine Corps did a great job of this. We can prepare ourselves physically, emotionally, spiritually, tactically to the best of our ability all the time. And I think that that's where esprit de corps and discipline and good communication and, you know, and knowing one another well, right? One of the problems that we see in all the AARs that come out after action reports is that oftentimes a lack of familiarity, a lack of commonality between, you know, people causes problems. In other words, they don't trust one another implicitly. But luckily, the men and women in Flower Mound, you know, were able to, you know, trust one another implicitly and get cover. So I think it's fascinating. It's a fascinatingly complex topic to tackle.
I think you're the one that brought it up, and I already brought it up. I think we talked about on the show before about, and I swear it was you that brought it up once before, in L.A., when they had years ago, the bank robbers in the full body armor, and they're walking down the streets, and the cops are shooting, and the bullets are just pinging off them, and the fire engine made a left instead of a right, and instead of shooting, he actually pulled the rifle up, waited.
Both of the bad guys raised their long guns and allowed the fire engine to pass through the scene, then lowered their weapons back down and started doing.
And back to your point you just made, Bobby, that ain't it anymore. That has changed. You know, exactly where, and we already talked about color of vest and not buying the vest that make your guys stand out. You know, I mean, let's hear. Oh, there, that guy must be important. He's got the red one or the blue one on that I can see. But
target acquisition. I mean, exactly. That's just, you know, that's so, not a that may not be the right way to go. That's assuming that you think that the bad guy is going to respect non-combatant, you know, apparel, but
right.
Anymore, that's lost. I mean, symbols of authority are just considered symbols of authority. And if someone's upset at authority,
that's what I dare that.
Well, Eric, so this all went down. Thank God your guys are okay. Thank God placed one of your combat veterans, a Purple Heart guy, as part of that crew, because that always helps to have somebody. You know, it's always like it's like you turn around, you've got an electrical problem at a house, you turn to your electrician, you know, and you're like, remember Terry Scott Penny, what's going on here? Or you turn to your plumber, you got a combat dude standing there, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that, you know, like I said, Flower Mound's always been one of my favorites. The guys, when you see, like I said earlier, you see them show up at a fire, you go, thank God, things are immediately going to get better here when they show up on the scene. But so this all happened. All right. What have you guys done? Obviously you did some critical incident stress management, because especially with these guys being the same crew one shift before that, this guy shot three of your cops and shot one of your ambulances. And now they come back to work and this happens. You know, I'd be worried about coming back the next day going, okay, what's going to happen on day three? So obviously you did that kind of stuff. Number one, are you guys doing okay?
Yeah, I think so. You know, time will tell, but we started down that road. Actually, Louisville sent a team over and assisted us with the debrief and the CISM on the follow-up on that. And we're very appreciative of sharing that resource. And we've had the opportunity to share ours and appreciate those coming in to assist us with that. So I think we did the initial piece there. There's probably more work to be done. Heck, we know there's more work to be done in the, you know, just at large with, you know, all the mental health issues that we know that are prevalent. And you take a few incidents like this and start questioning a few things. And I think that's where, you know, the work to be done moving forward, and even looking at some of the station security things. We were talking earlier about the keypads, and you know, we know that we've got a keypad issue that has been the same simple access piece for a long time, and so we're working on that. We're looking at you know, look, if you're going to be in the bay with the doors open, so be it. But can you close them? And you know, right now it's over 100 degrees in Texas, and there's reasons to keep the doors open. And like you said, the icon of the firehouse and what it symbolizes to America. But man, we're vulnerable. And even if you keep them closed, that very next Sunday, so that was Saturday. Here comes Sunday, and at Central Fire Station, you know where that's at. Now it's built up. We got apartments, four-story apartments that surround us. You know, that very next day, a lady pulled up on the ramp, ran into the bay and said, I need to use the restroom. She went in, they escorted her in to the watch office restroom. So now she's in the firehouse. Fortunately, you know, they stayed with her, but on the way out, she grabs a firefighter's backpack and headed for the car. Headed for the car. They stop her, they get the backpack away. PD makes an arrest down the street where, you know, it looks like maybe a stolen vehicle kind of situation. And, you know, but, you know, what, you know, I'm thinking, what is going on? I mean, society, what's going on here in an area that just you wouldn't think. And I think the message today, anywhere, anytime, any place, that's where society is right now.
Well, and it works out well, Eric, that we've got, if you looked at a map, Flower Mound, Louisville, the colony, all in a row represented here on the show, just coincidentally. You know, my question is next. So what actions? We've got people watching. A lot of people are going, okay, we understand what happened.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of bosses are sitting there going, okay, you know, I have to look at my firehouses. I have to. So, and I'll throw this to Scott, then maybe Terry, then Eric, and, you know, Bobby, is what are your thoughts? You know, everybody should be looking at their own policies, procedures, you know, their SOGs. They should be looking at their firehouses, you know, security wise, camera wise. Are we doing keypads to even get into the living quarters, you know? All right. If we don't leave the bay doors open, like John says, we left the doors open in the Bronx. He still do in the Bronx. Guys on watch with him open. He goes, now our cars are all secured and all that stuff, and we have to close the doors when we leave. But, you know, so Scott, what, you know, any thoughts? You know, we talked about this briefly at the beginning. There's gotta be things going through your head as the boss there as to, okay, we need to look at our own firehouses. Cause look, they're 5 minutes from us. You know, this could happen here. is there anything you know, I guess that's a question. Is there anything you could do to tweak what you've got, or, you know, are you comfortable? Like, I'll just say Trophy Club, you can't get in that firehouse without having a keypad, a key card to get in to anything inside except the bays. You can get in the bays doors are open, but everything else, every single time you come in, if you're working, you got to hit that. You have to punch a code, or you got to use your card. So at least you can't get into the quarters unless you're knowledgeable of the combination or you have a card. Are you doing anything different in the colony, or are you in the process of thinking about, let's look at this and do a little security check?
I'm giving it a lot of thought. You know, Terry called me that morning, but I'm going to say this. You know, I remember when I watched the Oklahoma City bombing, I thought, this is the worst thing I'm ever going to see in my lifetime. And that's been proven wrong. But, you know, this is probably going to be the unpopular opinion, but we can't address everything. You know, our number one fire station was the very first building built in the colony. It's an icon in the community. People come and go. I don't want to lock it down, you know, and the minute we lock these down, we're still leaving the station. If somebody wants to do harm to us, they're going to find a way to do it. And so, you know, I want to still maintain that community interaction to where we're approachable and we're still there and let people see us and know us. And, you know, I'm not smart enough to address every single thing that's going to happen to us. And so the obvious things, yes. Can we make improvements? Absolutely. Are we going to address them all? So I'm trying to think about what is that attempt to protect our people, which I want to do, but still be approachable by the community and not, you know, not go crazy about things like this. I mean, we've gone a long time and made it this far, and, you know, it hasn't happened. So you look at possible, probable uncertainties. And so that's kind of improvements we can make. Absolutely. But we're not, you know, we're not going to go crazy.
Well, and Bobby,
you know, can I just jump in real quick, Ricky? Cause I agree with everything Scott just said. I think he's put it perfectly, Scott. And thank you. And I love the new microphone. That's really cool.
Yeah. Man. My son gave me that. That's from Braden.
That's fantastic. Hey, Braden, way to go, man.
I got
to
keep up with you, big wigs, now that I'm a part of this team. You know,
right.
I'm my rookie status.
I'm holding my phone in my hand, my cricket. I've got my cricket in my hand. So
it looks like you're in the airport. You got smoke showing behind you.
I am in the airport.
So I know.
I'm in the airport lingerie.
I got you. Okay.
So, but the other interesting thing, I think Scott said it perfectly well. You know, and I think the biggest mistake we could make would be to live in fear. In other words, you know, we've just got to be with everything, with all the risks we assume in life, and especially as firefighters, you know, we just got to be a safe haven. We got to be a place where people who are really in trouble can run into the door and say, help me. You know what I mean? So I think that there's a fine line to walk, right? And I think there are places where, as Scott said, there are some certainties. So if you're in a community that's just, you know, in terrible disarray or very prone, okay, you got to take some extra security. But if you're in a community that's normally, you know, like a Flower Mound or a Louisville or a, you know, colony or, you know, that's a different story. But the one thing I did want to comment on, this is the first time ever on a hangout where every member of the hangout has been at a fire together fighting fire that I ever, right? Right, Scott? Yeah. You and I, Ricky, yeah. Eric,
absolutely,
Terry, we have all fought fires together. And I think it's the first time we've ever had. Right, guys?
Brilliant observation.
But isn't it true, guys? It's the first hangout where everybody on the hangout has actually been to a fire together.
And that's kind of where I was going. I said, you're looking at a map even before you came out. I said, we're kind of all right there. But Bobby, going back to what you just said, that's kind of where I was going. I'm like, at first when I got to Trophy Club, I'm like, what a pain in the ass. Every time I have to go in this, but... So I'm like, well, it's not bad. We leave the doors open, back and forwards, the firehouse, people drive by, hey, they're the guys and all that stuff. But we have the ability that the only way you get into inside the quarters, there's a vestibule. A person can run in and hit the buzzers, the beepers and all stuff. And they're right in there. You know, that they can even lock that door if they wanted to into the foyer if they wanted to, you know, but, you know, at least the guys are inside. Go ahead, Eric.
Hey, so immediately after that, so our architect, you know, several Lewis used them. BRW is a renowned architect here in the state of Texas for sure. They've done hundreds of fire stations and
great
and very skilled at what they do. And immediately I got a call from our stakeholder and from the from BRW, the firm, and really wanted to talk about, hey, are there lessons learned that they can take back in station design? Heck, we just opened the doors in February. I mean, this is a brand new house. I told you about the fencing and that. And immediately we went to that conversation, exactly what you're talking about, that access control point from the bay to the airlock, from the bay to the storm shelter inside. You know, we Flower Mound decided not to do it. We decided not to put access control inside the bay, preventing, you know, an actor from going from the bay into the vestibule or into the firehouse. And we, you know, BRW and I had that discussion about, you know, maybe that's something we want to look at in the future. Maybe it's something we want to retrofit and add. I know that Grapevine Fire Department has it. You know, we fill in at their Station 5 quite often and know a little bit about that. And some of their newer houses, they've incorporated that in there. So I think it's certainly something as we design new fire stations, something to consider, because at least you can, you know, not have an actor go from the bay to the fire into the living quarters.
Well, and Eric, it's exactly like I said, the one place there was a keypad, the front or rear outside, that if mutual aid companies or change quarters companies are coming to fill in, dispatch could call them real quick on the phone and say, here's the code. And you could always change it. That's a simple computer change.
Yep.
But everybody had their electronic cards. So some people, oh, this is such bullshit. You know, the electronic cards are such a pain in the ass. I'm like, you know, at least you can't get into. And here's the other thing. They have that, the community room that they allow different groups to use. So now you're going to close those. You shut the doors in the hallway. People can come in. You can program it. They can come in and they lock afterwards. You know, there's a lot of places that have that. So actually, it was actually that part of it was put together rather well, where, you know, you there is, and it's really not, I don't think it's that big of a deal that somebody walks up to your firehouse and they walk in the foyer and they have to, you know, bring it, you know, press a buzzer or something. And somebody comes, hey, how you doing? How's my mom get my blood pressure check? Yeah, come on in. Where at least you've got that part secure, maybe, you know, and you can still have the bay doors open and people still see the firehouses there and all that stuff. Just like John said, we had the doors open in the Bronx. They still open in the Bronx. There's a guy on watch there, you know, that kind of stuff. You can still have that, you know, I guess the lessons would be, you know, I mean, you could be on the floor checking rigs, a bad guy coming. There's no way to predict everything. We know that, you know, but at what point, I mean, you know, we've got cameras on buildings now. It's pretty easy to put security cameras in buildings now. I mean, hell, we have Ring cameras everywhere. You can't, you know, do that kind of stuff. You know, we had them. I remember at all our firehouses when I was a firefighter, we had the front rear door, where the front door, if you open up a door, it rang once. If you open the back door, it rang twice. So we told the chiefs it was for security reasons. Let us know somebody's coming through the front rear door. It was mainly to let us know if the chiefs were coming through the doors. But, you know, are there, you know, there's ways to make sure, you know, when you hear a door open, you know, there's like, you can put these little tones that go off to let you know there's ways to do it, that, hey, somebody just came in the back door or the front door of the bays when they're closed, whatever, if you have that stuff open, like we did, where it's not, you know, locked or whatever. But I think the parking lot security has become, even in the nicer neighborhoods where it's gated now, we've done that where, you know, it's electronic gate to get in out of the back parking lot. They can still climb that. They still, like Scott, like you said, we talked about earlier, if somebody wants to do harm, that's like, well, we got a guy who got fired. He's, you know, what if he comes back? You don't think he can figure out, he worked here for 20 years. You don't think he can figure out how to get in here if he wanted to, you know? So, you know, and I agree, Scott, there's probably some people who say, yeah, but you have to do stuff. Well, what is enough? And that's why we titled this show. The whole thing is, how much is too much? How much is too little when it comes to firehouse security? So,
you know what, Chief, I think, and I agree with what Scott said, there's a balance. You got to figure out what that balance is. Your balance is not the same as ours. And maybe Station 7 in Flower Mound is a little bit different than their Station 1. It certainly is with our stations. But for me, this is all about your personnel in those stations. Pay attention to what's going on. You know, when someone calls you on the phone and says, lock it down, hey, have a plan, yeah, figure it out. And it's not a time to ask questions. It's not a time to run out and investigate. There's nothing that's off the table at this point.
Interrupt for a second. That's the best point out of, think this whole thing was, out of everything everybody's talked about. When you said that, I keep going through my head. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I got to, when they said lock it down, like most people, wait a minute, what, they locked it down. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it was something that if anything out of this meeting, out of this hump day, you know, you need to write an SOG, an SOP for your department that says, if you have this type of, you know, incident go down, when, you know, what does a lockdown mean? And it means that you don't go, well, you know, Chief Greaser, I just wanted to see what was going on. Now you got a dead firefighter. Cause this guy, my whole gut feeling is this guy would have shot your guys. He would have shot him. I think that's what he wanted. That's why he was mad. Where the F you are. I know you're in here. Just like you said that. I think he would have, there would have been a good chance he would have done that. And we're talking a whole horrible, god awful tragedy, which your guys did, like Terry. So Terry, go back. I mean, I just had to say that.
No. But I think at the end of the day, you know, I live in Flower Mound. I mean, after this hump day, I might, you know, look for another place to live. Apparently Chief Greaser's, you know, but I live in Flower Mound. I think I live in a really nice neighborhood, but I can tell you this, every night when I go to bed, I make sure my garage door's closed. It's simple stuff. And I don't think that's any different than at a fire station. Pay attention to what's going on. In Louisville, we don't have a problem with our guys taking a nap. I don't want all of them taking a nap. I want someone, you know, I like that watch area. And I like, you know, I know in Dallas fire stations, that watch area, really nothing happens in that bay that person doesn't know or see what's going on out there. But the design of stations now, that's not really how it works anymore. Everybody has their own cubicles and their own space and their own iPads and their own, you know, whatever. But if you've got five guys in a fire station and they all go back and hunker down in the center of this building and no one's paying attention, right? And so, you know, I think that the common sense factor has to come into this and say what happened in Flower Mound is absolutely unfortunate. It's a freak deal. I'll count my blessings and say that it happened close enough to us. It's probably not lightning going to strike twice over here in Louisville. But at the same time, if that phone rings and dispatch says, hey, XYZ, hey, figure it out and have a plan. It ain't the time to wander around going, well, I wonder what they meant by that. You know, so I think it's a conversation. I think all administration should have this conversation. I think this is a conversation that needs to be had with the personnel. And just understand nothing's off limits. I mean, listen, the day a person walks into Sandy Hook Elementary School and decides to shoot kids, you think they give a crap that you're a firefighter? You think they give a crap that you got a red vest, a yellow vest, a blue? It's everyone's fair game now in this weird world. And so right now, I think you just got to be, you got to pay attention.
And we just got to, you know, our producer Pete posted a comment for William Blackwell. Appreciate it, William. He says, I think Thompson's on point. We need to be alert, but we have to, capital have, be approachable. Our bloodline is our connection to the community. So I think all of us we're strong believers that we have to stay connected, but we do have to address some things, and that's our policies and our procedures. One thing, and Eric and Terry Scott, is I think where we're lax, and Bobby, you know, when we were doing it, is at night we used to, where I came from, I wanted a captain. The captain did a 360. When it was time for everybody to turn in or whatever, at the end of the night, you made sure the apparatus bays were closed. That, you know, that whole thing, make sure the station's here. Cause what happened at Firehouse 6 in Louisville is they left the back bay open. And she came in and she burglarized the place where they're sleeping, walked in a bunk room. I mean, oh my God. So just you, like Terry, you said it, you made me think of it. At night, I do the same thing. I have a camera in my garage so I can look to make sure our garage door is closed. That's the only reason it's in the garage. I could pull up my ring and go, okay, the garage is closed. Cause there's been times like, holy crap, I left the door open for an hour, you know, whatever. And we live in a nice neighborhood, but I, you know, same thing. Part of your SOG should be when it comes to station security, firehouse security, someone needs to do at the end of the night a 360, you know, where you walk around, make sure it's secured. Okay, we're good to go. Time to go to bed or hunger, whatever you're going to do. You know, I like the idea of somebody being awake. I like the watch stuff. You know, somebody, you know, what are you doing? Kind of maybe securing certain areas of the firehouse, but keeping the rest open or whatever. The lock it down kind of thing. I think there's a lot of incredible lessons, Eric, out of what happened with your department that people could fine-tune their process without shutting out the public, without saying you stay out of our firehouse, where, you know, like Terry said, you know, there are days when they're bringing in cookies to that firehouse all the time. We love our firefighters, and you had a guy walk in there and they end up with a shootout. So I mean, you know, I think fine-tuning your process is something all the bosses need to be. This is one of those where you get your people together and say, okay, look at what we have. What do we have for a policy regarding, you know, building security? And if we don't, we need to come up with one, and there's plenty out there. Or if we do, do we have to do any fine tuning? They may say, no, everything looks good. We've run through this. I think we're in good shape. Look, we can't keep everything from coming into our fire. We can't, you know, can't predict everything. We can't keep everything from happening. But are we doing our due diligence? I guess it is. We like that phrase, to make sure we're looking at every avenue to kind of pick our folks, right, Eric, to take care of our people.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Scott, what do you think, buddy?
No, just agree. And you know, certainly something that I'm going to take from this, like you said, is we're going to go back and have that policy about the lockdown immediately, define what that means and don't question. I mean, I think that's a huge thing right there. That we certainly, because I don't think we had, you know, it's assumed that we know what that means, but every firehouse is going to handle that differently. So that's great. And just knowing that, man, nothing is beyond possibility in this day and age. You know, my son works down in South Dallas right now, and the stuff he tells me about every day, it's spreading this way, unfortunately. And times have changed. Be on your toes. Be aware. And I can hear Gordon Graham blowing his horn whistle, right? The train coming down the tracks. Some things we know are coming. Let's address those. The other things, let's just hope they don't happen.
Exactly. Bobby, any closing thoughts, buddy?
I love the lock it down means lock it down. That's a great, I agree with Scott. I agree with Eric. That's a great policy to train on. Just like, you know, abandon the ship means abandon ship. Mayday means mayday. Lock it down means lock it down. You just do it. You know, and once it's completed, then you can ask why or whatever. But, you know, it should be, do it now, lock it down. So I love that. What a great takeaway. Great ad. No, that's I'm good, Ricky. I've got to run to gate H15 and head back to the state of Texas, although I'll be wearing my proud Oklahoma face diaper when I land, just to rub it in you guys' noses. Just kidding. Everybody in Texas wishes they were in Oklahoma. Come on, let's just be honest about it. I'm just teasing.
They tell us here all the time that anybody north of the Red River is a Yankee. So I just, you know.
Oh, there you go. But, so anyway, I wanted to say thank you. It was great to see Eric, and it was great to see Scott and everybody. I apologize for getting on late. But
safe travel.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing Charles and the gang down in San Antonio. We're all going out to dinner tonight, and ought to be a blast. Mike Mullins and Brian, so it should be fantastic. So
it's nice, cool, 102 degrees.
Man, I'm looking forward to that. So the other thing too, I just want to mention, FDIC registration is open. Please register. Summer school is on. We're going to do summer school in the first week of August, and then we're going to head down to San Antonio, and we're going to do EMS summer school at EMS Today, and that's going to be in the middle of August. So there's your whole August. You can be, you know, going to conferences, and so please register for that. And the call for presentations, I've extended it on both. They're a little lighter than they normally are, and I think it's just so many things going on and people coming out of their cocoons and all that kind of good stuff. So, you know, if you thought you missed the call for presentations, it's open. And I was going to call him Captain Greaser. When I worked with him, Chief Greaser, I did not see your proposal. So this is fair warning. You better get it in. So
you know, that's not a bad idea, Bobby. Is not to put
this could be a, this could be, this could be a great, this could be a great proposal for FDIC, man. What just, to do?
You know, how many times, Bobby, you told us on the advisory board, when you've got a great case study, something we can learn from, you know, right, to have somebody come and say, hey guys, right or wrong, first, this is what happened.
And especially Eric, you guys, the firsthand experience, that is huge, man. You know, you're not telling somebody else's story. You're telling your story. Telling your story. So, but thank you for having me and outstanding. Great.
Safe travels and go fly the plane. I'm sure you're going to be up there flying.
And what happened to Eric's hair? I remember when Eric had wavy black hair, man. You got old, dude.
Didn't we all?
That's that fifth trumpet, man. It's that fifth trumpet. As soon as you do it, it's like, you know, everything. Yeah. But anywho, well, thanks, Bobby. Terry, closing thoughts, buddy?
I appreciate Chief Greaser jumping on with us kind of late minute, but sharing those stories, like I said, it's I always like to hear from the source, and those type of stories is what makes us all, gives us all the opportunity to get better. And it's nice to be able to, you know, to take this information and share it with our guys. But I appreciate it. I'm curious to know the body shop's going to fix the gunfire in a Flyer mount engine. I'll see how that turns out, but
I think they're in Louisville. We're bringing the medic over to Louisville, and I'm only halfway kidding.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, no, I appreciate you coming on. And honestly, I would encourage anybody out there, have the conversation, let's talk about this. I like the idea of, you know, a station lockdown policy, and that, you know, in just not to spool this back up, but in your particular case, like if I'm sitting here thinking to myself, all right, lock the station down, first thing I would do is run to the bay to close the bay doors. So, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of those things you gotta, and, you know, pay attention, know what's going on. There's cars in your parking lot, figure out why they're there and, you know, things like that. So,
yeah.
But anyway, thanks for sharing.
Good point.
Absolutely.
Chief Greaser, closing thoughts, buddy?
No, it certainly is my honor to be on with you all today. You know, Chief Alton, you know, reminding us that we've all fought fire together, how cool that is. And, you know, it's just a changing time. And I think, you know, is society even changed more post COVID? But I agree with Chief Thompson that, you know, I don't want to change the fire service. I don't want to change being the icon of the community and be open and approachable and be here to serve our community. That's our core value of service. And, you know, we can't get away from, you know, being what the fire service is, but yet be vigilant, be aware, be watchful. Heck, you know, don't distrust somebody to come in and use the restroom. You know, we got to watch out for anybody that's in our facilities.
That's right. Don't let, like Terry said earlier, Eric, when he was a cop in Dallas, in South Dallas, just because of where he was at, every single time he was at work, he was on alert because of where he was at versus somewhere where they have like next to nothing crime wise. You let you know, hey, complacency is just a fancy word for laziness. And, you know, it's, you know, all the years I've been teaching for Southlake, you know, since 2014, stepping off their leadership academy for their police and fire there, whenever they tell me, you know, we talk about, you know, secure area, I'm like, yeah, I drive by this memorial every time I come to teach here that is dedicated to these state troopers that were killed by Bonnie and Clyde. Bonnie and Clyde gunned them down right here, right there. There's a memorial right there, you know, in Southlake, you know, at the border of Grapevine, you know, where this happened. Yeah, a long time ago, but like I think we've all said, it can happen anywhere. So, you know, for those out there, you know, look at your policies, look at your SLGs, look at your door security, your parking lot security. Ryan Wagner asked a question about how many departments have security cameras that can be monitored from the watch room or have the ability. Some places have it where you can click on a television or nowadays with smartphones or whatever, or things like that. Look at your firehouse security again. Take a look. Just see what you've got in the way of monitoring things. Do you have the ability to get to where you can shut the doors all from one location? If you have two front, rear, if you need to shut your overhead doors from inside, you know, how secure are you? How unsecure are you? We don't want to, I agree with everybody. We don't want to shut the world out. We've always prided ourselves on being part of the community, but at the same time, you know, we got to look at what we're doing and how we're doing it and make sure we haven't missed anything, I guess is what I'm saying. Like I said, as much as it was a pain in the rear, every time I want to get into the living quarters at Trophy Club, either to punch the code or use the car key, you can walk in anytime, you know, you wanted to, you know, that in the bays and stuff. But we had it where at least you had to ring a doorbell or do an intercom or come into the vestibules and say, can I see a firefighter? You know, agree or disagree, that might not be, you know, but look at your SOGs. Look at what you're doing. Maybe, you know, again, you know, 360s once in a while, especially before you go to bed, as to how you could take care of things. So, Eric, if anybody wanted to get a hold of, if there's another chief out there, and I hope you don't, well, there's always that fear of getting bombarded with stuff. But if somebody wanted to get a hold of Chief Greaser and go, tell me what you did for your guys. What did you do critical incident stress management-wise for your guys? Because, you know, we just talked about 2 days in a row. Oh, my God. You know, that kind of thing. What did you do for your guys? Or have you done anything with your firehouses or whatever? What is email the best way for them to get a hold of you?
You bet.
What would that be?
Eric, E-R-I-C dot Greaser, G-R-E-A-S-E-R at flower-mound.com.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, Eric, thank you so much, brother, for you're a good friend, a great friend to all of us, and a great boss. Like I said, one of my absolute favorite fire departments, the ones that I always looked forward to seeing when I saw him at a call. Thank you so much. Scott, if they want to get a hold of you, buddy, email.
Scott@fireserviceleadership.com.
Perfect, perfect. Terry?
T. McGrath@cityoflouisville.com.
Perfect. And Bobby's walking through the airport with his mask on, but if you need to get a hold of Chief Halton, if you can't figure that out, you're sleeping in a hole. We used to say, just open up the magazine. Just open up the front cover, get in there. You'll figure out how to get a hold of Chief Halton. There's a million ways to get to his email address at Clarion. But I'm at chieflasky@gmail.com. And guys, another great show. Thank you so much. Thanks for all of them that were watching us. Bobby, thanks for joining us from the airport. If you want that fire station safety inspection form, you know, email me. I'll send that to you. Another great show. We're all on Facebook for the most part, and Twitter, and our firehouses and fire departments. Both Louisville County and Farmer do great jobs with getting word out on social media. Doing a great job putting the fire service in a positive light on social media, posting some great stuff. But just head over to those sites. You want to see us. Our next show for the group, and we'll have John Salka with us next month, will be July 21st. We always mention that Fire Engineering has some great hangouts Wednesdays at noon Central Time, 1 Eastern, with some awesome people. We've got the podcast at night. Don't forget, FDIC is in August the 2nd through the 7th. Come on out, have some fun, get fired up. I'm still working, Bobby, with Monster. We want Monster to rename a drink that week. It's just going to be Monster FDIC, because that is my Monster energy drink going to Indy. Deadline's been extended to July 2nd for your programs for next April for 2022. That's it. In closing, the group, we always ask you to please keep the men and women in our armed forces in your thoughts and prayers. And we'll say this again, do the same thing for our brothers and sisters in law enforcement. They need our support more than ever right now. There's just got tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of great police officers out there that need our support. Have them in your firehouse for a cup of coffee, invite them in for lunch, for dinner, take care of them. Look out after them just like they would for us. So God bless those in law enforcement. Thank you everybody for tuning in. God bless you. And we'll catch you next time.